From the Jethro's Barbecue Studios, now featuring Happy Mondays with 2-for-1 Happy CBD Cocktails. This is Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Keith Murphy.
He's a big, hairy American winning machine.
Andy Fales.
I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
It's the Murphy and Andy Show.
Shoots a three and got it!
Powered by AD.
British Young Cinderella.
On 1460 KXNO. And now 106.3 FM.
Monday on the Murphy and Andy Show. It is so good to have you with us and to start another week. AD powering us up. Andy be here in just a moment. We're one day away from the Iowa premiere. Opening wide. I think it's kind of kept quiet, but Top Gun Maverick opens wide Thursday, not Friday. Like, all the posters and trailers say Friday.
Yeah, right.
But if you want to get ahead of that crowd and you can get in there Thursday night.
Yeah, I don't know why posters and things haven't evolved to change. Are these supposed to still be like secret showings?
Yeah, I don't know. But that it is
website.
It's a good little secret because I think we are running in danger of, well, we're running into the danger zone of hype.
Yes.
This is the most critically acclaimed movie of the past few years. Not past few weeks. I mean, it's like a critical consensus of this thing is will blow you out of the theater.
I'm worried about that.
I know.
Worried about that.
Manage expectations.
I think the IMAX scenes, like the action scenes, the flying scenes, I have high expectations. I think it'll meet those.
Don't see that in a living room.
No.
Yeah, get to the IMAX.
I think it'll meet those expectations. I'm not convinced that the story will meet the expectations of like, hey, this was a great film.
We'll see.
I guess.
We'll see. We'll see tomorrow.
Because I rewatched the old Top Gun over the weekend with my kids, introduced them to it, and it's a good movie. The fighter scenes hold up. Like, all of that stuff holds up. I realized I hadn't seen this movie in a really long time. There's some of the other stuff that I could leave behind.
I watched it again this morning because Colin... my youngest son, he's 18.
Yeah.
So he's pre-gaming to get ready, to see it. And by the way, if you're one of our many golden ticket winners, just make sure you bring your ID tomorrow to the Palms. You'll be on the list. So nice of the Palms and Mr. Movie to do this for some of our listeners. It's going to be fun to see it. And tomorrow, if you have Netflix, and I think most people do, you can watch Top Gun. We are going to talk about it quite a bit tomorrow. It's slow off season. So we're going to get ready to watch this with just a look back at some of the good, bad, and the cheesy from the original movie. That'll be tomorrow.
And you only have, I think, a few days to watch it on Netflix. Yeah,
they're warning people. Because
at the end of the month, it goes off.
It's shot back into the top 10. It's like people are watching it like crazy.
Yeah, it's not hard to find on Netflix right now. It'll pop up right there.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it or you haven't seen it in a while, Dave Price last night at WHO 13 is like, yeah, I watched... Watch Top Gun with my kids. I hadn't seen it since the 80s.
That's what I realized is I saw this movie so much growing up. I haven't watched it as an adult. Like, I haven't sat down and watched this movie until this past weekend.
It
changed
is.
The way I thought about some of the things.
And a couple of times I listened to it, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going back to this Take My Breath Away again? Man, how many times can they play this song in the movie? It did win the Academy Award for Best Song. No. That's an Academy Award-winning song.
My son is 6 going on 7, and he's at that age where, like, even on his own shows, if there's a thing about a crush or any sort of love scene type thing, he, like, covers his face or, like, puts a pillow over his head. So when we watched it Friday night, I just fast-forwarded through all that crap. I let him watch.
You're okay.
I let him watch them sing the song in the bar. Really, every other time that Charlie was on the screen, other than in class, we just fast forwarded.
I need to save some of this for tomorrow. But how many women in a bar for like 5 years after that had to put up with this?
Yes.
You lost that loving feeling
with guys
move
who didn't look like Tom Cruise
and thought they were the first ones to do it.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that's all coming in tomorrow. Now Bruce in Beaverdale has a quickie poll on this. Although, maybe maybe Andy and I somehow fit these roles like 30 years ago, but right now I don't think so much, but I get the point.
Yes. If Murph is Maverick and Andy is Iceman, who is AD? Am I Wolfman, Slider, Goose, or Cougar?
All right, Wolfman doesn't do a lot, except he does make the call from the locker room that Maverick just quit.
Which is a weird, we can talk about it tomorrow, but just a weird, nothing in the exchange that he just witnessed. Maverick never quit. He didn't quit.
Well, he closed his locker.
I guess, yeah, he closed his locker.
Slider is just kind of a jackass. I mean, he's good. He's good.
And
he's good at it.
He's got a good body in that volleyball scene, man. He is cut.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the cool.
You want the body.
If you go into it thinking that Iceman is not the villain, you really start to like Slider a lot more.
That's true.
Because, they win. He's obviously a really good rear.
He was a pilot.
Yeah.
But he got sent to the back. Didn't quite have what it takes.
Goose have a really good rapport.
He's the best character in the movie. He's really funny.
And he fits with this because, you know, we're kind of the three, and if, you know, he fits with these.
He does die.
And yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. No. He dies. And Cougar.
Buckles under pressure? Is that what you're trying to say about me here?
But he's a family man. I mean, as he's buckling, he keeps looking at his wife and kids.
He does.
And he's got a really great delivery as he's walking away and just sincerely goes, thanks, Maverick.
But all it takes is to be in missile lock and it just he just ends his career. He didn't even get shot at.
Did you watch Mito Pereira at the PGA Championship?
True.
These guys are in fighter jets, not trying to hit a driver.
Some people are chiming in on Twitter, and one that I thought was really good from C-Mac. I mean, no offense here, Andrew, that's me, but you are Charlie. Now, ignore the female.
Charlotte,
the love interest part.
It's Kelly McGillis.
AD runs things, keeps the guys on track, provides the needed information, and evaluates their performance.
Yeah, that's...
I think that's pretty good.
That's called, they're going from the... Bruce and Beaverdale is clearly going from the guys who are in the Top Gun training program.
I would have liked Viper. I would have appreciated a Viper nod.
At this age, Andy and I could be Jester and Viper.
You could.
I'm Viper, and I don't know that. Jester's too dry for Andy, though.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, Iceman, that's Andy's frat days.
Yeah, you could see Andy.
Yeah, just going up, poking people, tweaking them a little
bit.
Yeah, biting.
For no reason.
With just big teeth. All right, let's get to the one at one here on a Monday.
The one at one.
One.
With Murph and Andy, powered by Kaburski Brothers Lawn Care.
Shout out to State Track, strengthening the case of Moonlight Graham. Tim's point that it's the Iowa's most underrated sports event, maybe even the best, although... State Wrestling won our vote by a wide margin, but 40,000 fans over 3 days, new record. 23 local Central Iowa winners. Several local teams won. Even had some drama on Saturday where a Dowling runner was pushed to the ground from a City High runner who was disqualified. Then the Dowling runner had to rerun the race by himself, which is hard to do. There's nobody pacing you. Still finished third. And then Dowling ran away with the championship for the first time. And boys, Northwest girls won in their first year as a school. You think that's going to become a sports power out there in Milwaukee?
Okay.
It was a fantastic 3 day event. So well run. And every time you saw a video, you're like, man, the stadium is full.
And I don't know if it was because Tim Flattery of the Moonlight Graham podcast came on KXNO last week and kind of made the case that the state track meet was the best high school sporting event that we have. And so that was in my head all weekend. But man, it really put up a good fight over the weekend. I mean, with the video coming out of there, yeah, by all accounts, just a fantastic event. And the co-ed nature of it, it's just really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a great event. PGA Championship, Mito Pereira is all set to become the first major winner from Chile, or as Andy would say, Chile. He was leading, Pereira was, by one at the 18th tee.
He's going with a lot of club again. Tiger 07. Look at that follow through.
He did the same thing yesterday, below, but this is going right. Yesterday was up the left side.
Oh, my goodness. He couldn't make a follow through. Where is it? Oh, my goodness. It's in the water. Oh, my goodness.
That was hard to watch.
Yes.
And the guy, he double bogeys, yes. Pereira does. Nerves got him. He just, if he bogeys, he's in the playoff.
Yes.
And
can probably settle back down and, you know, try.
Handled it with such class.
He really did.
Came in front of the media and just said the nerves got him a little bit. I mean, not in so many words, but he acknowledged that he rushed his swing, and then
you could see it on that swing right away. Oh, like, oh, that's a bad swing.
He had feelings that he don't usually. He hasn't won, and there he is, and he just has to make par to win a major.
And there's like these two schools of thought. One is, hey, you've played 71 holes the way that you play. Don't change the way you play now in this final hole. That could throw you off. That could screw things up. But man, if you just play it safe there. Like, you don't need to use your driver on that hole. You don't need to do that. You won. It felt a little tin cuppy where it's like, nah, I'm going to play it this way. This is how I play. Win or lose. And it's like, it's easy to say when you're on the tee box, but when you're, you know, getting a check that's $2 million less than what you should have had, that's a tough one to swallow.
The money part of it, too. Yeah, he lost at least $500,000 if he gets to the playoff and then loses.
Right.
Maybe more if he wins the whole thing, but yeah, it was tough, and
that was tough.
He did handle it well. This is all relative, of course. We're talking about sports. We get that this meltdown is not the same as one that has more worldly things on the line, but it was it did create some late drama. It played out better than the Masters, even though for many people it does lose something when most of the people on the leaderboard, McIlroy was kind of lingering but wasn't a threat to win. Maybe you think of Justin Thomas as a star.
I mean,
I don't, but some people do.
He's a name that's known.
I know his name.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And I guess that's about all you can ask for.
So, anyway, Pereira's out of it. So, Zalatoris and Thomas go to a playoff. And Thomas, down 7 at the start of the day. That's the third biggest comeback in the history of majors. He wins the playoff and gets the classic Nance pun.
It's Justin time. Again at the PGA Championship.
It's just in time.
Just in time.
All right.
Yeah, that's not a great. I mean, it's not like they were racing the clock or anything. There's not a clock in golf. So it wasn't just in time.
Just let Nance go. He's at the whatever he says at this point. We know it's coming and it's okay. And he's more successful than we'll ever be. He's doing great. Time for another $1,000 home run. Enter the nationwide keyword at KXNO.com. The keyword is fun at KXNO.com. And stay tuned for another chance in an hour. Two other big moments this weekend. One you may have forgotten.
BasicOffer.com for details.
It's Murph and Andy's Play of the Day. Powered by Prairie Meadows.
Brunson defends, snaps it outside to Wiggins. Goes by Bull. Oh! Drops the sledgehammer!
Visit PrairieMeadows.com for information. It's fun you can bet on.
Murph and Andy show, and that dunk from Wiggins over Luka Doncic was outstanding, and it was, in the moment, a little bit was taken away because the official originally ruled offensive foul. It's like, what are you talking about? How do you possibly get offensive foul out of that?
Yeah, it was such a weird call, and then like right when you see the replay, like live, it doesn't look like it, and then as soon as you see the replay, it's obvious that it wasn't. And you're right, it kind of ruined the call, ruined the moment, because right away the whistles blow and everybody kind of stops, and takes you a second to understand what is happening here.
Yeah,
but what a dunk!
It is a great dunk, Andy. This series is going to be over quickly, it looks like, but it's had some moments already that are just fun to watch.
It sure looked like things were going to turn around on Friday night, man. The Mavs put together that first half. Doncic, got that one right?
Yeah.
Jokic and Doncic, I screw those two up all the time.
Well, they're both great.
Look alike.
They're both great,
alike. He was unstoppable in the first half on Friday night. Everything he was putting up was going in. They had a big old lead, and I doubt anybody in that building thought that the game was over, and sure enough, it wasn't. It was all Warriors after that. That had to be the backbreaker right there, though, that just going up two games to none like that after that first half. Yeah, it's not surprising that they won again last night.
The Mavericks had to win last night. And, man, fans were hyped for Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. And Charles Barkley, who picked the Mavericks, came in on a horse. And it was a college game day atmosphere. I don't think I've ever seen an NBA outdoor setting. Now, that show is so wildly popular that we shouldn't be surprised. But, man, it was crazy out there. Even if they lost, the Mavericks lost, afterwards it was loud and crowded and liquored up for sure. The building was loud as well. It all pointed to the Mavericks. And then you're reminded that the Warriors have Steph Curry and Clay Edwards.
Curry of three. Bullseye!
Look at this. Step back to your left. Shot clock running down. And looking at Stan Van Gundy with a little bit of a...
I think that was at you, Red.
Man, they poured it on. And now it's 3-0. And you wonder... Well, I do. If the Mavericks, I've been surprised several times in these playoffs, but you blew that big lead Friday night. Mm-hmm. Then you have this raucous home crowd, and you lose. Can you find enough to send this back to California, or is it over now? I don't know.
You've kind of broken everybody's heart. Yeah, like the teams, the fans. Yeah. It's going to take a lot to get up off the canvas.
I did not watch the Preakness live, and I actually forgot about it. I got busy with my Saturday, and I forgot about it. That's how much it was on my mind.
Well, it worked out for me. The Cardinals and Blues weren't on until later. Watched a little of the PGA Championship, but didn't care too much about it. So I flipped it on. Watched a whole bunch of the pre-race. Watched the whole race.
You were the one.
I was the one. Mike Tirico and everybody at NBC, they just have to sell it like it's just as big as it would normally be. And it was a really nice day at Pimlico. It was like in the 90s, so everybody's sweating, and they were making a big deal out of that. But they just have to tell like the other stories that aren't really about, you know, the horse that's expected to carry the story load. Because Epicenter, I mean, he didn't win the Derby, so there's not that much you can say about a horse that's a favorite in the Preakness.
Yeah, he finished second in the Derby.
For the most part.
Got run down.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's the favorite in that race, and everybody's kind of wanting to talk about him, but there's not that much to say. But they just had to just kind of play it straight up and down. So I was kind of looking around at Pimlico. Looked like it had been fixed up pretty well. It looked nice. The crowd was there. For Baltimore, it's a gigantic event. It's their annual event. It looked cool. Like I said, the weather made everything look really, really nice. But then they ran the race, and this time Epicenter kind of runs the opposite race. He gets kind of shoved toward the back and then blocked off and bumped out, and he's kind of smushed into the rail, finally finds a little bit of room at the end and starts gaining on the leader. I've already forgotten the name of the winner of this race.
Early voting.
Yeah. Just doesn't, even in the shortest race, though, and of course, it's ironic because it's the shortest race, and he just needs a little bit more room, a little bit more track to chase this horse down and take the lead, but he didn't have it in a mile and 3/16. So he loses, so that's it. That's it. Done with the horse racing season. Interesting story.
Yeah, this feels like much like the Chiefs and Bills in the playoffs last year. You knew that was going to be the tipping point for a change in the overtime rules, and it was. This feels like this might be the time to think about spreading these races out a little more. A lot of, including horse health advocates, have said for a long time that they need more time between these races. But the thought was, well, you got to get so wait till another horse wins the Triple Crown so you can get that out of the way. And then what was it, like 36 years or something between Triple Crown winners? And
then
we finally get American Pharoah, and then there's another
Justified.
Triple Crown. Yeah, so two Triple Crown winners in the not too distant past. Within the past 7 or 8 years, we've had two Triple Crown winners. You could reset and just, change this. Because if you don't know, Rich Strike, the Kentucky Derby winner, is healthy, but his trainer and owner decided to stick to the plan and not have him run in the Preakness because they didn't think it was good for the horse. And I think anybody can understand that, but it just takes almost all the, not all the interest, but almost all the interest out of the Preakness, certainly for the casual fans. And it was a good race. I expected Epicenter to win, but as Andy said, he again finished second.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Early Voting who comes into the final furlong with a three-length lead. Secret Oath is second. Epicenter is on the rail. Behind them, Creative Minister. Then it's Armagnac. It is Early Voting reaching for the wire. Epicenter closing on the inside. Early Voting, Epicenter. Early Voting comes inside and wins it. He wins the Preakness by a length and a half.
So it's kind of an interesting move there toward the end, and they talked about this in the post-race. This ends up being like the most interesting thing about the whole day, is Early Voting is getting tired toward the end, and Epicenter is gaining on him. But, you know, you get through the commentary that tired horses wander. You know, it's hard to keep them on a straight line.
So do tired drinkers.
Yeah, right. It's like he's just been out a little too long. But he swerves inside and cuts off Epicenter. So they're like, "Oh, does Epicenter have a case about? Can he gripe about this? Can he make a case and say that was illegal, yeah, or interference somehow?" And then for like 2 seconds, there's drama, and you want to, "Oh yeah, 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 maybe there's a little story to this after all." And then as soon as the 2 seconds are up, everybody's like, "No, he was well clear of him. He didn't bump him. There was nothing illegal about it. There's nothing even, unsportsmanlike about him. His butt is well clear of Epicenter's face, and he does cut in front of him, kind of like a race car would do, but he was going to win no matter, you know, which direction he was running at that point. He's fine." But that was it, and it was just kind of over with. But
we had actual interference at state track this weekend, and I received more emails and direct messages about that than anything. And if you haven't seen the video, it's have you seen it, AD?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. So they're coming around the corner, and Heidish of Dowling and the Iowa City runner.
What race is this?
This is
800.
Yeah, it's the 800, and it's a physical race, which Heidish from Dowling, who's a great distance runner, middle distance runner, he points out that it's a physical race, that there's bumping. Well, frustration, it seems, probably gets to the Iowa City runner a little bit, and he just shoves Heidish, and Heidish goes down and just rolls across the track, and he's out. And
wow.
So that happens. So they get together at the end of this trying to figure out what's going on, because Iowa City and Dowling Catholic at this point are also trying to win the team event.
Ooh.
So they determine there's still some events left, but those two teams are in it. The judges get together. They review the video. They talk to the race officials, all that. They determine that it is interference, and the Iowa City runner is disqualified, not just from that race, but from the remaining relay races. So he's out. Now, Heidish, who already has won, he has another race that he wins, and then they let him rerun this race because he was pushed. But he has to do it by himself, which is challenging.
Wow.
Because they can't reset the whole field.
Right. You can't have everybody rerun.
Yeah. So he reruns it by himself.
He's got to run by himself with nobody pushing him.
Yeah, like 70 minutes after he's run a different race.
Yeah,
he runs
much
it
less
again.
That it's the second time he's had to run.
And he finishes third. So he finishes third in the state with the rerun. And then, whether coincidentally or who knows, maybe it happens this way anyway, this seems to spark Dowling, and Dowling dominates from then on, goes on, the Maroons go on to win. And I know your thought is, oh, Dowling won something. That's great. Didn't think this would ever happen, but Dowling actually won its first boys' state championship after that in track. In track, you know, there've been other.
Yeah, they won a few on this.
Yeah, other state championships.
It's one of the few trophies missing from the case.
So that the move you're talking about in the Preakness, you know, is it too much that we see this in, you know, auto racing? Was he clear of the car before he cut over to keep him from being able to pass? You know, Dale Earnhardt Sr. was famous for doing that a lot, you know, just coming down and keeping you from being able to pass.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was no contact in the Preakness. The horses were well clear of one another, but it just looked like for a moment we might have a story. Might have some reason to continue talking about this race once it was finished, but that was quickly cleared up, and then everybody moved on. It's a shame, and I understand. Look, I think your logic is right there. I mean, I think they did need to wait until they had another Triple Crown winner before they looked at changing the rules, because then it looks like they're just trying to, you know, fix things in the name of getting a Triple Crown
right,
winner.
Right, right.
Making it easier. Because, I mean, honestly, it's not fair to all the horses that have had to race quickly in the past to win the Triple Crown. But now, I mean, I think sometimes you just have to change the rules and say, look, things have changed.
Animal science has
Animal
changed.
Animal science has
more.
Changed. We know more. We care more. We're doing things now in the sake of truly in the spirit of racing, right? I mean, you're not trying to make it easier to have a Triple Crown winner. You're trying to keep more horses in the field. You're trying to allow the owners, the trainers, to do the right thing, but then still race their racehorses.
Because if it's 2 weeks and then, what, 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont, and the fact is the best 3-year-olds are not in all the races. The best 3-year-olds are usually in the Derby, and then trainers and owners start picking their races based on the health of the horse, and that kind of tells you everything you need to know about it. But you're looking for a story. Here's a story.
Yeah.
All right, so early voting wins the Preakness. That sets up an epic showdown in the Belmont. Kentucky Derby winner Rich Strike versus Preakness winner Early Voting. That's right. Wow. Early Voting is not going to run the Belmont.
Well, you know.
Maybe they'll get together in a Breeders' Cup or something.
What's the point? Yeah, I think they're going to make the same amount of money no matter what. There's just nothing on the line.
If there's one angle, now I am interested more in the Belmont just because of this incredible run to victory that Rich Strike had. But if you're looking for any storyline, it's like one won the Preakness, one won the Derby. Let's settle this in the Belmont.
Absolutely.
Nope. Early Voting is not going to run the Belmont.
Jeez. Andy, did they spend a lot of time talking about Rich Strike in the lead up to the Preakness, or did they avoid it completely?
They didn't avoid it, but they didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about
it.
It's
a good story. Like, you're right. Had he been running, that would have been all the coverage, because it's a cool story. Like, they'll make a movie about this someday, right?
And you show that overhead camera run again.
They
did talk about that. They talked about the amazing run, but they didn't go overboard about it, because really you don't want to set up a story that
then you're not going to see.
Yeah, you're basically just saying, here's what we don't have.
It is still a television show. I mean, they're trying to keep you interested.
It's a good television show. It's well put together. I mean, it's great coverage. It was a beautiful day. You had a beautiful day at the Derby also, so really all the highlights looked really, really nice and made the sport look good. But you didn't have the Derby winner there. It just was like, what?
Murph and Andy Show, 106.3 KXNO. All right, so the Cardinals at one point yesterday, this was the NBC morning game, which I think is a smart thing for Major League Baseball to do. It's something that's on against not much else at 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings, like a national game. So the Cardinals are playing the Pirates, and for the second time in, I don't know, it feels like a week, we have a future Hall of Famer who's never pitched on the mound. It was Albert Pujols a week or so ago, pitching with what was that lead, 15-0?
15-0.
Cardinals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cardinals, yeah.
All right, this time the Cardinals are up 18-0, and catcher Yadier Molina takes the mound. Now, one of the questions I have about this is, I thought, and I'm glad some of these baseball code things are going away, but wasn't the baseball code at one time that to put this kind of player on the mound, you had to be down by that much, not up by that much?
I think that's the...
Was it one
more,
time the code?
I think that's more of, yeah.
If
I think
not,
that's
you're rubbing the face in it a little
right,
bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're losing by 15, you put Yachty in, nobody thinks twice about it.
I still think it looks that way a little bit, but... I mean, they are trying to not use another pitcher. Yes. I think it's clear.
And everyone should understand that. I don't see it as taunting the other
team.
No,
and both sides need to understand that this is what's going on. So you're going to put those guys in there, and then you shouldn't have any problem with the guys at bat swinging for the fences.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I see Yadier Molina on the mound. I'm a major league hitter. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to pad my stats a little. This could be worth a few hundred thousand at negotiation time, because I'm going to add one to the home run column here.
Yeah, and he's throwing breaking balls, which is really, really funny. I mean, there are a few pitches that he had that had some English on them. I mean, they really had some break to them, and I was like, man, that's impressive.
But these guys are so good, if it doesn't break sharply and at a high rate of speed, these hitters are so good, they can just crush it.
It is funny to see him just hit some moon shots. And I think the Pirates were throwing out some guys, too, that weren't throwing real hard either.
I think that's their starting pitching.
Man, yeah, I know. Man, this year, Major League Baseball's disparity between the haves and the have-nots is showing up.
Yeah, it is. You can go down the payroll.
Yes.
Mets, Dodgers, Yankees. Who am I forgetting
here? I mean, there was a few exceptions, like the Twins are doing well.
Yeah, right.
The Nats are doing really poorly.
The teams that are doing...
Yeah, the Reds are terrible.
The teams doing... By and large, you just... The teams doing the worst, the A's, the Pirates, the Reds, they have the lowest payrolls by far. And the teams doing the best by far, like Dodgers, Yankees, Mets, the Mets have the biggest payroll.
Yeah, there's a couple of outliers, but for the most part, it's broken down.
It really
just
is.
Along payroll lines, and it's so clear that, you know, if you're that's the beauty of the NFL that nobody else can do is the parity of the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have these franchises that are never really down and out. I mean, they're one good pick or, you know, one good signing, one good, you know, player develops in the right position away from turning things around. And even teams that don't have one guy work out, I mean, they put together a few good draft classes and they're able to, because players can help right away like that, not like Major League Baseball usually goes. They can turn it around pretty quickly and you get that kind of parity. But it just seems like Major League Baseball has way too much of the, you know, the disparities between the teams that spend like crazy and really look like they're putting their all into it. And then the teams, I mean, how long has it been since the Pirates have been good? And I feel bad for those fans because they're good fans.
Yeah. And they, you know, a long time ago, but like the We Are Family teams and going back to the 70s.
Well,
Pirates
even like the early 90s teams that had, you know, Bonds and Mania and those teams. I mean, those were good
teams.
It's been that long. I think they've had a playoff team sort of here and there, just a couple of outliers. But for the most part,
McCutcheon was really good. And they have such a cool stadium, but you're right, they just haven't been very good.
Yeah, they do. They do have a nice stadium.
And they clearly, that's because their ownership is not willing to spend money. And that doesn't mean just going out and signing free agents. When their own players get good that they've drafted and brought up, they don't keep them.
You're right. The NFL has solved the parity the most. Now, it can't overcome bad management at times. The NBA does a good job with that, too. Although, you know, if you've had a historically bad franchise, sometimes it just, like the Kings, they just can't seem to get out of it. But there's a chance.
But, I mean, the Warriors that were a perfect example. They were so forgettable for so long. They get Steph Curry, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. I mean, mainly it's Steph Curry, but yeah, absolutely the other two as well.
Or close to being
a
dynasty.
Yeah,
because college football and college basketball don't really have parity. I mean, they don't. It's if anything, it runs a danger.
You just have enough possibility with college basketball that you can have a good season.
Yeah,
without, you know, being in the Final Four.
Because even as St. Peter's is on that miracle Cinderella run, no one is thinking like, hey, you know, they may win this whole thing. But it's just like, how far can you go in the tournament? That's what makes that work in ways that, and college football used to have the, well, what bowl game can you win? And that's where it's kind of falling apart now, because between opt-outs and the bowls just having empty stadiums, it just doesn't seem like much of a consolation anymore.
Yeah, it's where in college basketball, like the season the Cyclones had, you make a Sweet 16. That's incredible.
It's a great
season.
You don't
have to win it all. You don't even have to be in the Final Four to have a really good season and be proud of it. But you're right, the bowls were always that, and that's so gone away that, you know, you go to a bowl game, I don't even care that Iowa lost their bowl game. I forget most of the details about that game against Kentucky. It just doesn't matter.
It would have made the season better, but
sure,
not by that much anymore. It just would have hit 11 wins, which is so rare. But it's time to play Guess Whose Birthday, and it is presented by the Cellular Advantage.
Let's play Guess Whose Birthday on the Murph and Andy Show, powered by Cellular Advantage.
All right, Andy, you're up. Guess Whose Birthday.
I think Murphy and Sears are great guys and true professionals. But if they're taking a much-deserved vacation day, I would like you to consider me as host for Sound Off.
That's Michael Admire.
Yes, it is.
With the greatest and the NCAA pizza tournament we had with Gusto, Admire My Sausage.
Love it. Should have won just on the name itself.
Admire My Sausage. And now he's a vegetarian.
And the voice of Drake basketball.
Yeah, yeah. So admire.
How old is?
It won't be Admire My Sausage anymore. It'd be
Admire My Hair.
Admire My Tofu.
His Instagram feed.
Yeah.
His hair is always perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
His hair really never should have its own Twitter account.
Its own Instagram page, which everything else is blurred out. Just
Ed Wilson has Admire's hair as a guy in his 50s. You know, just like a full head of hair that you can comb back. Straight back.
Yeah, nice and straight. Just holds the pose really, really well.
I hate that about both of them.
Michael Admire is 32.
He's 33. You get the point. Well done. Murph, guess whose birthday?
When you're playing a team that is going to be a 20-win team that expects to win their league, that's a different kind of opener than a lot of people are going to play.
Oh, Fran McCaffrey.
It is. Yeah, it's found like kind of a random clip, but I was like, yeah, his voice is distinctive enough.
I think he's getting near possible retirement age, but he has a contract through 2058. Fran McCaffrey is 64.
He's 63. You get the point. We're tied up. Andy, guess his birthday?
No, I don't hate Balboa, but I pity the fool, and I will destroy any man who tries to take what I got.
What's your prediction for the fight, then?
Pain.
Oh, he's so great in that role.
It's Mr. T.
Yes, it is.
By the way, do you know Rocky's real name?
Sylvester, for sure.
No, I was reading a...
I saw this, too.
I was reading a book that has this in it.
Rocco?
Is it Robert?
It is Robert.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Robert?
Mm-hmm.
Robert
Rocky's
Balboa.
A nickname.
Robert Balboa?
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Bob Balboa.
I wish I never knew that.
Well, I take it back. Let's go back in time.
Bob Balboa.
Bob Balboa. If we have like Bob 1, Bob 2, Bob 3, Bob 4, Bob 5, it's not as big a hit.
No.
Bob doesn't win the Oscar. Bob.
How old is Clubber Lang?
Mr. T, I think it's short for Tenenbaum. He is 71.
He's 70. You get the point. Murph, pressure's on. Guess his birthday.
3 days now before the start of the Australian Open tennis tournament, unvaccinated star again is facing deportation after the Australian government just hours ago revoked his visa for a second time.
Okay, right now, God dang it, Andy. Andy's talk of Jokic.
Doncic and Jokic.
Doncic, Jokic. This is the Joker. So this is a Jokic. God, what's his first name? Guy has 20 majors.
You're going under.
I'm going under. Yeah.
Swim harder.
It's Novak Djokovic.
Djokovic. I
it's
just
kind of both.
I couldn't get past Jokic.
Joker.
Novak Djokovic is 36.
He's 35. Andy, you win.
So that should be a tie. We should be in overtime.
You didn't get his name.
I know, right. But I,
it should be.
But that's your you're fault right. for coming here. Jokic.
I had no idea that was coming.
Came in and was like, I'm going to throw him off 15 yeah. minutes before we play Guess Whose Birthday.
He did. Mission accomplished. Coming up next on the Murph and Andy Show.
Let's ride.
It's time for Throwdowns on the Murph and Andy Show.
Let's throw it down, Murph. Which is the biggest story from the PGA Championship? Is it Mito's meltdown, Justin Thomas's win, Tiger withdrawing Sunday morning, or Phil not being there to defend his title?
It's a good question. The most people care about Tiger withdrawing because with him went much of the interest. And that really upsets the Tiger haters, and there's still a few out there. I still hear from them. They just don't. They're not going to change their mind on how they feel about him, and that's your right to do that. But that when he walks away, especially as compelling as it got difficult to watch. He was in so much pain he couldn't bend over and line up a putt. He started limping poorly. I mean, his 69 Friday to make the cut might have been the most impressive round of golf he's ever played under the circumstances. But Saturday, he couldn't go. That's the storyline that impacts the most people. But historically, it's Pereira's meltdown. I mean, Jan van de Velde is still talked about to this day for losing that three-shot lead on 18. And he had some bad luck involved when it bounced off something. This wasn't bad luck. This was a guy who the nerves got to him, and he just sprayed the ball into a creek, and it was like watching a car crash in slow motion. I felt bad for him, and he handled it with class. But I think that's, over time, that's going to be the one that's talked about the most.
The overarching story is Tiger Woods. It is. I mean, for the casual fan or the one that's only going to follow if he's involved, this is all they take away from it, from the greater world of sports that's not clued in on the individual rounds of the tournament. This is the story. His health was a question mark going into the season. The fact that it is his health, you see him limping, directly complaining about that injury or that rehabilitative, that his leg, lets you know that it's not really a question mark anymore. I mean, there's an answer there. Yes, it is an issue. It's going to be this entire season, and it may be too much. I think you can just say at this point it's probably going to be too much for him to fulfill the probably unrealistic, but still it's Tiger Woods expectations that we had for him this season. It's going to be too much.
Andy, the Warriors look really good. They built a 3-0 lead on the Mavs while the Heat and Celtics battle in the East. Would you bet the Warriors or the field to win the title?
Boy. I mean, at this point, I think I would go with the Warriors. It probably is not smart because it ends up being tougher than this just about every year. But I don't know. They're clicking right now. It looked like they might have hit a wall a little bit in the first half. But again, I just think going into the second half of the game on Friday night, it just didn't seem like anybody in that building really thought that they were not going to come back, and they did just that. So I don't know. They look like a team that has kind of found its step again. Having Klay Thompson back has made it a different feel to the team. It seems like they are the statistical and the sentimental favorite. I think it's too much.
I would take the Warriors against the field at this point, partly because I'm expecting the Mavs to not have much left in the way of heart and emotion. So I think the sweep's coming. And I think there's a much greater chance that this Celtics-Heat series gets extended for a while, tires whatever team is left out. So you're taking one over two possible teams here, but I would do that.
Murph, you step onto the tee box of the 72nd hole of a major. It's a par four. How many shots would you need to be up to feel comfortable that you would still win?
10 shots. I would need 10 shots to feel comfortable. And that's up 10 shots.
You'd be up 10 shots.
Up 10 shots, not 10 shots.
So you think
to get...
you could get a bogey plus nine on the hole and go in as the winner?
Yes. Plus nine, I think I could get. That's a horrible.
It's 13 shots.
Yeah.
It's to get like 400 yards.
That's terrible. But nerves are going to be a factor here.
Yeah, you got a
haven't
huge
played
gallery.
Golf in a long, long time.
A drunk gallery.
And most people greatly underestimate, A, how difficult these courses are set up, and B, how good these guys are. These courses are not set up like the course you go play on the weekend.
No.
The greens especially are brutal. So, 10 shots, I feel like I could get there eventually.
Yeah, but I'm in the lead at this point.
You're in the lead. How many strokes do you need to be up?
So it's not me that's gotten to this point, because I couldn't be in the lead.
Well, you magically appeared, and somehow you had done this.
Yeah. You're tagging in.
Right.
I woke up on third.
Yes.
Thought I'd hit a triple.
Yeah. You hold a four-stroke lead on a par four?
Just me. How far out would I need to be to feel like Andy could hold everybody off?
Yeah, as you are today.
Yeah. Gee, man, I think 10 strokes is a pretty good round number where I feel like I could just kind of roll it along. Just keep it straight that way and not hit any obstacles. I would probably have to jump over at least one thing, so that would take 3 strokes. I think 10 shots is probably pretty good. You need some real safety valve there.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Man, yeah.
I think you guys could both hold a 10-stroke lead on the last hole.
I'm not even sure I could.
Short putt everything.
Yeah. You might play it with a putter, tin cup style.
Might as well.
Play with a shovel, a baseball bat, and a putter. 2 p.m. trend coming up next on the Murph and Andy Show, 106.3 KXNO.